That is kind of intimidating, that thing, isn't it? My name's Butch Mazin. I'm alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity and privilege of coming here and taking part of your celebration this weekend. Thank Brandon for picking me up at the airport. And I'm happy to be here. I don't mind missing an exit. But you know, Sandy, when you drive with those guys and when they turn their head to talk to you, the whole car goes over. Anyway, I do want to thank the committee and congratulate on their 23rd anniversary of the conference. I love coming to these things. I just really, really do. I always have my sponsor. Took me to these things since I was new, and I've been coming ever since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I think sometimes that we have a fellowship within the fellowship. I really do. There seems to be folks that just are enthused about Alcoholics Anonymous, who are enthused about being here in recovery and our process and our progress, and love coming to these things and getting together. And that is the fellowship that I crave. You are the people that I enjoy being with. And so it is good to be here and be part of this. I want to thank the committee for their work. I know you don't have any selfish alcoholics in the United States. But in Canada, we have a lot of selfish alcoholics, very selfish alcoholics in Canada. And I'm going to tell you, I know you would never do this, but it's sometimes very easy for me to come to these things and enjoy a wonderful weekend of fellowship and AA talks and Al-Anon talks and a dance and a banquet and a great weekend and get in my car on Sunday and drive home and sometimes forget all the work that's been done on our behalf, because these things don't just happen. They just don't turn the switch and this event takes place. There's been people getting together all year long to plan and organize this. There were people here early this afternoon to set up that registration. There is people that will sit out at that desk all weekend and give up their weekend in this conference to on our behalf to do this stuff. And there will be people here cleaning up after you and I've gone home. And I want to thank those people from the bottom of my heart for your service. I really do. I have always been much more impressed by what I see you do rather than what I hear you say. I have always had the ability to sound better than I really am, including tonight. But that's just the way it is, and it's good to be here and to be with some folks that I know. I have a deep love in my heart for the old-timers, deep, deep love, deep love. Men and women who've been coming for 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years, who've made sacrifices and commitments to Alcoholics and Al-Anon so it would be here for people like you and I. I love them from the bottom of my heart. And I have some heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to tell you that I feel so deeply honored and privileged to be here with the folks that are taking part in this weekend. I truly and truly mean that. That's not podium talk. It's not said because I need you to like me. It's said because I mean it from the very bottom of my heart. Giants in our program. Giants. I'm so grateful to those tapers, those people that lug this stuff all over the country and stuff, because I've always been a guy that's listened to tapes and that since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I love listening to the story of an alcoholic. I believe that it was the story of an alcoholic that got me sober, has kept me sober, and will continue to keep me sober. And I want to thank those people for that service of doing that so that we can be benefited from it. My sponsor was an old-timer in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor came to Alcoholics Anonymous on July the 17th, 1958. And he was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous until he passed away on June the 10th, 2004. And when I say active, I mean active. And one of the great joys in my life, we have a lot of speaker meetings in Canada, and he talked a lot in AA, and he took me all over the country with them, all over the place he took me. It was one of the great joys of my life, was to travel with Bobby Dobson and meet people and take part in these things and stuff. And after I was sober for a little while and would get asked to come to the front of these rooms, he knew how nervous I'd get before getting up here. And he'd sit beside me in the meeting, and before my name was called, he'd rub my back. Aww. They cry at Al-Anon, Beverly, when I do that. And he'd say to me, "I know it doesn't feel like it, kid, but I'm with you every step of the way." And I'd get up the front of this room and look out, and there he'd be sound asleep in his chair. Yeah. And we'd drive home, and he'd say, oh, that was a nice talk, Butch. Say, thanks, Bobby. Thanks, Bobby. My home group's the Three Legacy Group, Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Monday and Thursday nights, and if you're ever there, we would love to see you. I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to say I belong to the best group in the world. I don't say that anymore. I find it very arrogant of me to say that. I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I belong to a group where all three legacies are in place, where it's not just about personal recovery, but where unity is there, where we practice the traditions and operate under the umbrella of our 12 traditions, where it's not just the same two or three people doing all the work in the group, but as a group we function and operate together. As a group we go to detox. As a group we put on meetings. I belong to a group where sponsorship isn't something that's just talked about, but it is there and it is in place and it is promoted and put there for new people when they come into that room and into that meeting. I belong to a group where there's six or eight people standing at the door when people are in to be greeted and welcome them. Because I'm a guy that believes when a new guy or new gal walked in through that door for their first meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous, an in-depth version of step four doesn't mean much to them. But a warm handshake and a welcome, come on in and get a cup of coffee and sit with us, means a great, great deal. And I belong to a group where all three legacies are in there, where service and unity and personal recovery is there. And I'm a guy that believes that when a new person walks into an environment such as that, their chances of recovery become much greater than if they walk into a place where none of that's practiced in place. So I belong to a strong group, and I believe in the home group. I'm a guy that believes that the home group is the heartbeat of AA. I believe that in my heart. And so it is good to be here in Strong Alcoholics Anonymous here in Georgia. When I say that I'm happy to be here, I truly, truly am happy to be here, because alcoholics don't always get where they're going. They just don't. Drinking alcoholics seldom get where they're going, but sometimes even sober alcoholics don't get where they're going. And I'm going to share a quick story with you to tell you that. Let me just tell you, first of all, there was a time in my life that I was not allowed in the United States of America. Let me add, nor should I have been. They said, we have enough people like you here already. We don't need to import them. But I applied to the United States Department of Justice for a waiver that would allow me to come into your great country. And I have it. It's up there in my room right now. It's a beautiful piece of paper about that big. United States Department of Justice, Andy, has my name on it. It allows me to come into the USA on humanitarian grounds. I don't even know what that means. But I have that. And I'll tell you the other thing that I don't know about any of you, but I from time to time can misplace things. So when I got that waiver, I made 25 photocopies just to be safe. And anyway, the other thing when I come here, when I come through those customs places, they want to know where I'm going. They don't want to know that I'm going to Marietta, Georgia. They want to know precisely where I'm going to be. I don't know why they want to know, but they seem to want to know. So anyway, I'm going to a thing a number of years ago in Illinois. I get up early in the morning. I like to fly early. I come here to be part of the convention. I don't come here to talk. I come here to listen. Anyway, I get my stuff. I can't find my waiver. I said to my wife, I said, where's my waiver? Like it's her job to know where my waiver is. She said, I don't know, Butch. It's wherever you've put it. I said, no, it's not. You've lost it. She said, listen, go get one of those photocopies and get going. You're going to miss your flight. So I get all my stuff, my gear, I get this thing, I go to Pearson International Airport. Please don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. Our border patrol do a wonderful job protecting our borders. God bless those men and women. But I think when they go to border patrol school, they teach them how not to smile. Huh? Serious people there. So anyway, I get my stuff, I get all the gear, I go up to this guy, give him the stuff, he looks at the waiver, he says to me, what are you, a criminal? I thought, here we go. I said, well, you might have said that at one time. He says to me, he says, this is a photocopy. I said, yes, sir, the original's at home for safekeeping. Lies just fall out of my mouth. I don't need to think about that. It just comes natural, rapid fire. I need to think about truth. Lies, I don't need to think about. It's just right there. He says to me, he says, you can't travel on a photocopy. He said, you have your I-94 form. I pulled out this form. He says, that's the wrong form. I thought, this isn't shaping up well. He said, you go over there, fill out the right form, and you got to go see somebody about this photocopy because you cannot travel on a photocopy. I thought, I'm not going to Illinois today. But anyway, I go over, I fill out the form, and I got one of those keen alcoholic minds that we only hear about from alcoholics. You will not hear about the keen alcoholic mind at Beverly's meeting tomorrow, I'll assure you that. So anyway, I watch and I wait till his line's full, and there's a more gentle looking man at his line, and I, a man like Sandy, and I go over to his line and I give him all the gear, and he said to me, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to Illinois." He said, "What's your purpose of business?" I said, "I'm going to talk at a conference, Alcoholics Anonymous." He said to me, "What address are you staying at?" Oh man, I'd forgot to get the address. I said to him, I don't know. He said, "You don't know where you're going?" I said, "No, I don't." I said, "But it's okay because somebody's going to pick me up at the airport and take me there." He says to me, "Who's picking you up?" I said, "I don't know." He says to me, "Let me get this straight. Somebody you don't know is picking you up, taking you somewhere you don't know where you're going." I said, "Yes, sir, that's right." He says to me, "What did you say your purpose of business was again?" I said, "I'm going to talk at a conference, Alcoholics Anonymous." He says to me, "What are you going to talk about?" And before I could answer him, he holds up his hands and says, "Hold it. You don't know." So I'm happy to be here tonight. On September the 21st, 1989, two men came to my mother's house. That should tell you something right there, my mother's house. Somewhere every 33-year-old self-respecting alcoholic should be is with mummy. Two men came to my mother's house practicing Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form. In its purest form. Those two men left their homes, came to my mother's house and talked to me about their drinking. They did not talk to me about my drinking. They did not tell me I shouldn't drink, I shouldn't drug, I should go. They didn't tell me nothing. Those two men came to my mother's house that night and talked to me about their drinking and told me what had happened in their lives since they came to something called Alcoholics Anonymous. And would I like to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with them? I had been on the street since I was 13 years old. I had never been to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been running those streets, and those two men came to my mother's house that night. I was helpless and hopeless and took me to my first meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have been with you ever since that night. I don't know how to explain that to you, well, I do, but I don't know what to tell you about that, but I want to tell you that I am extremely grateful for that experience, because I know that's not everybody's experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, and come back to AA. A lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking many times, and come back to AA. Some people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, and never come back to AA. But that was my experience, and I'm grateful for it. The other thing that I'm grateful for is, as I've liked coming here, I was telling Brandon tonight, almost from that first meeting, almost from that first night, there was an attraction here, there was something here for me, and I've loved coming. I like going to meetings, I like going to conferences, assemblies. I've loved listening to the story of an alcoholic, and the seedier the better. So I've always liked coming. So I really have no regrets since the day I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I really don't, other than one. I do have one, and that is that I didn't get to drink with some of you people. I don't know if you've ever thought that or not, but I'm telling you, I have met some people here I walked away from thinking, "I'd like to have a little drinking with that guy." Huh? We're a cast of characters here, aren't we? You couldn't make some of this stuff that goes up around here. I went to an AA thing a number of years ago up in Sault Ste. Marie, up in the Canadian-American border, up north, of, long way north of us. And I went there, and I got up Saturday morning. I was going to talk at this thing that night, and I went out to have some breakfast. I picked up the local paper. I like to read about the community I've been invited to come to. Only seems fitting. And I'm sitting, and I'm reading a paper on the front page of this little local paper. This is a true story. I hope my whole story is true, but this part is for sure. There was a man, they had arrested him coming across the American-Canadian border drunk on a stolen street sweeper. And my first thought was, I like to drink with that guy. Okay, we better get drinking here. I forget what time we started. I was 25 years old, and my wife had thrown me out of our home. And I want to tell you that I loved her as much as I was capable of loving at that time. I had a new address every night. I lived in the stairwells of apartment buildings in downtown Toronto. I just went from building to building. Each day I had a new address. And at nighttime I was under the stairwells in those buildings. In the daytime I was like a rat in a sewer. Out on those streets looking to score, looking to scam, looking to rip somebody off to get the money I needed to get to do the things I needed to do. I hear people in AA talk about AA luggage, matching green garbage bags. Huh? I didn't have any AA luggage. Had the clothes on my back. Still had an ultra suede jacket, though. Huh? I'm 25 years old. I'm living in stairwells. I got the clothes on my back. And nobody wants anything more to do with me. And let me add right now, nor should they. Because alcoholics of my type are users and takers. I use and I take from everybody I come in contact with. Now, it doesn't always appear that way. Because, see, I want everybody to like me. I'm the guy in the bar buying the drinks for everybody, passing the bag around, everybody's friend, good old Butch. The only reason I ever did anything for anyone was so you'd like me, not because I cared about you. I couldn't care less about you. And I'll tell you who I use and take from most, the people who love me, my own family, the people who care the most. Because see, they love me so much they can't stop trying. One more time. This time it's going to work. And they keep giving and giving, and I keep taking and taking. Till eventually I break their hearts. And the people who love me the most got to push me aside because they can't stand it any longer. And that's where I am. I'm in the east end of Toronto. I'm all jacked up one night and nowhere to go, as I said. And my wife and I owned a home in what they call the beaches down near the lakefront. And we had a screened-in porch with a couple wicker couches on it. And I thought, I'm going to slip in there and get a couple hours and get out before she wakes up. Well, I pass out. And I wake up to one of these. And I opened my eyes and looked, and there was that little gal that I loved. And she looked at me with disgust and pity. And she said, Butch, you're a useless piece of scum, and you will never change. And if you cared anything about me, you get up and get out of here, and please don't ever come back, because I can't stomach to look at you. And I get up and I left there, and it was summertime, July, August, I don't know, and it was hot, hot, and I'm sick, and I'm hungover, and I'm dirty, and I'm heartsick. And I walk down to what they call the boardwalk, down on the lakefront. And I'm sitting down there in that condition on a park bench. And over where you guys are sitting, there was another park bench, and there was a little boy, 5 or 6 years old, sitting there eating a popsicle. And I looked over at that little boy, and you know what I thought to myself? Wish I had a dime for a popsicle. The big shot, huh? Everybody's friend, good old Butch, sitting on a park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Nobody on the face of this earth wanting anything more to do with me. And I'll tell you, I had a thought as clear then as I'm thinking right now. I knew at that moment, I knew that that park bench and places like it was where I was going to go back to every single time. And I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. I was 25 years old. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33. I had 8 more years on those streets. And I will not bore you tonight with some horror story, because I don't believe it would serve any purpose. Because if you're an alcoholic like me, you already know, it never gets better. It always gets worse. I had 8 more years on the street. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33. And I joined a group. And I got a sponsor. And I did the things you guys told me to do. Forget this suggested crap, the stuff you told me to do. You know where I was a handful of years ago? Huh? I was in Rome, Italy. Rome, Italy. Standing in the Sistine Chapel, looking at the painting of Michelangelo from hundreds of years before. And the tears started to pour down my cheeks. And I thought of that guy sitting on that park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. It is a long way from that park bench to the Sistine Chapel in Rome. It is a long way from where you and I came from. Many of us here tonight, the dredges of society. Many of us here, our own families didn't even want anything more to do with us. Yet here we sit this weekend, members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, living good, rich, full, productive lives. How do we get from where we were to where we are this weekend? How does that happen for people like you and I? Because it's not supposed to. But you know how it happens, don't you? And it only happens one way, and that is through the grace of God. through the grace of God that you introduced me to a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous. You sure want to believe that I'm grateful to be here with you folks and be a part of this thing. I like to drink. I don't know about any of you people, but I like drinking. I sometimes think people in AA think it's sacrilegious to say they ever like drinking. I started to drink at an early age. I hear people talk about dysfunctional families. Was my family dysfunctional? I don't know. Let me just tell you, it wasn't the Cleaver residence around my home. There was lots of parties in my home. Always on a weekend there was a party. As a little boy, they let me play bartender. I could take them beers and take away the empties. They'd let me have swigs. And they'd say, isn't he cute? And I love that attention. So I started to drink when I was 4 years old. Now, I wasn't a daily drinker when I was four. No, my allowance wouldn't allow it. I actively sought out alcohol. I was 12 or 13 years old. I got a guy to go into a liquor store, get us a couple bottles of wine. I was going to be a wine connoisseur. Two bottles of Old Sailor. I think that's comparable to what you call Thunderbird in your country. And I drank that wine. I got drunk, puked, and passed out. And that was the end of my social drinking. All downhill after that. I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous say they came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping to become a social drinker. You ever hear that? They say that in your country here? Came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping Alcoholics Anonymous was going to teach them how to drink socially. Really? I want to tell you tonight, I didn't want to be a social drinker when I drank. I don't want to be a social drinker tonight. I don't particularly like social drinkers. I find them weird. You ever watch a social drinker drink? Huh? They let the ice melt in their glass. That's sick drinking. That's sick drinking. You ever drink with a social drinker? That's enough to make you puke, isn't it? You're having a few scoots. Would you like another one? Oh, no, thank you. I'm starting to feel it. I thought that's when you put it in overdrive. Social drinkers. My wife's a social drinker. My wife's the most beautiful little gal in this world. She's at home right now. She prays for me. And I'll tell you, I love that little gal, but this is just as true as I'm standing here. This just recent, maybe a month or so ago, I'm at home one night, and I look over, and she's got a bottle of wine, Sandy, on the kitchen counter with a funnel in it. Funnel. I'm watching that. I thought, what's that funnel that? And I took a look, and there she is. She's got a glass of wine. She's pouring it, Beverly, in the funnel into the bottle. I said, what are you doing? She says to me, I put too much in the glass. I said, don't you ever do that again. I will divorce you. Social drinker. I'm a barroom drinker. I like bars. I don't identify with closet alcoholics. Doesn't mean they're not alcoholic. Just drank differently than me. You know those people, you hear them, they get the bottle, go in and lock the door, put on the country western music? I don't identify. I'm a barroom drinker. I like bars. I like opening the door to a bar. The smoke it billow out, the tinkle of glass, the smell of stale urine. I love it. I love it. I like neon. I like neon when I was drinking. I still like it. That's why I stay out of those casinos. They're not good for guys like me. And I got to tell you, I thank God I never tried to get sober in the United States of America. I don't know if I'd have made it. God, I love drinking in your country. I love it. You got many more here than we got in Canada. I call them juke joints. You know those divey little rat hole scuzzy places? You got a couple here. I spotted them on the way. Oh, beautiful places. Beautiful places, Peter. I'm telling you. Huh? You know, those divey little joints with a neon sign says cocktails. I went to an AA thing a number of years ago in Pennsylvania. I decided to drive there. I'm driving there. I'm going through this little town in the middle of nowhere. I'm driving down the main street, and I hammer on the brakes to my car. I'm backing the car up. Sandy, my wife, said to me, Butch, what are you doing? I said, I got to see this again. And guys, there it was, this divey little rat hole joint. Had a neon sign. Said, stop for one. Stay till one. Oh. Oh. If I'd have been drinking, I'd have had that tattooed on me. Still a work of art. Oh. Anyway, I'm not going to talk any more about my drinking tonight other than to quickly share with you what drinking does to and for an alcoholic of my type. It is important that we talk about our drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to give, I know there's some new people here. I saw some young folks. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome. I want to give you a little heads up, though, because you're going to hear some talkers get up in front of these rooms and say things like, I don't like drunkalogs. When you hear that, buckle up. Buckle up. You're about to listen to 50 minutes of drinking. It is important that we talk about our drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous for the purpose of identification. That is the greatest tool that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what makes Alcoholics Anonymous work. One alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous work for alcoholics, other programs work for other problems. We have to have that identification. But I've come to believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, it doesn't matter if I'm drinking Dom Perignon or Aqua Shave. Doesn't matter if I'm drinking in the Fairmont Hotel or under a bridge in a box. It's what drinking does to me. And that's what I quickly want to share with you, particularly if you're new, what drinking does to and for an alcoholic like me. The things that I'm going to share with you, I did not know at the time. I did not know this is when it was happening. I saw it in inventory. I saw it as you took me back through my life and helped me see my life honestly for the very first time. But as I look back today, I remember being a young boy in school. 10 years old, 11 years old, I don't know. And I'd be in that classroom and the teacher would be at the front of the room and she'd ask a question. And she'd start looking around the room to see who she's going to ask to answer that question. And my head goes down like this. Oh, Jesus, don't let her ask me. Because I know if she makes eye contact with me, she's going to ask me to answer that question and I don't want to answer the question. It doesn't even matter if I know the answer to the question, I don't want to answer the question. When I went to school, you used to have to do book report. Get up in front of a whole classroom full of kids. Oh, no good. No good. I get up in the morning, I'd say, Ma, I've been puking all night. I'm sick. I can't go to school today, Ma. Please don't make me go. Because I want to tell you that I would be absolutely terrified at the thought of getting up in front of that classroom full of kids. Every decision I ever made in my life was based on fear. Most of it unfounded and ungrounded, but fear. Where I go, what I do, who I hang out with is all based on a comfort level. I don't know about any of you, but I every now and then would get goofy. I'd go on about a five-day bender. I'd come home after 5 days. My wife would be waiting there. I'd say, sweetheart, that's it. No more. No more. Never, never. I swear my Ma's life, never, ever again. That's Sunday. I'd wake up Monday. I'd think to myself, I shouldn't have said that. I should not have said that. I'd have to go to a wedding that following Saturday. You ever go to a wedding sober? That's a bad deal. That is a bad deal for me. I would be at that church sweating, thinking about that reception that's going to start in 3 hours. I'm back at that reception, and that dance is going to start, and I don't have anything in me, and my hands are sweaty. I got a knot in the pit of my gut. I feel awkward and out of place, and it is horrible. And I got to do one of two things. I got to get over to that bar and get a couple drinks into me, or I got to get out of there because I can't stand the way I feel. Every decision I make is based on that. You want to know what kills an alcoholic like me? I don't even know I'm afraid. I think I'm afraid of nothing, and I'm afraid of everything, and I don't even know it. We talk an awful lot at these topic meetings. Let's discuss resentments tonight. Huh? I prefer to call it hate. Hate. Now, I know you're not that sick in Georgia, but in Canada we are. Hate. I'm the type of alcoholic that's out driving his car. I'm at a red light, and I'm on the nod by now. Huh? That light would turn green, and the guy behind me lays on his horn. Whoa. I almost go through the roof of my car. I want to get out of my car, go back there, open the door, drag him out by his throat, take a crowbar and crack his skull open. I know some of you spiritual giants never thought thoughts like that. But I do. I'm not talking anger management here. I'm talking rage. I'm talking a white rage. I'm talking a rage that I don't have 15 minutes before and I don't have 15 minutes after. But I have a rage inside of me that comes out every now and then and I have no control over it. And I say things and do things to people I never wanted to say or do. And let me tell you who takes the brunt of my rage. It happens behind closed doors. Because see, I'm the guy out there playing big shot all the time, trying to make everyone like him. So you don't display that rage there. You keep it for behind closed doors for the people who love you. Because you see, I think I already have their approval. I need yours. Lonely. I'm 25 years old. I'm standing at a subway platform in downtown Toronto on a Friday night. I'm all jacked up. And a train pulls up and the doors open. And a young couple my age get off that train holding hands and walk off into the night. And I feel a sadness and a loneliness. And I think to myself, why can't I be like those people? Why has all the trouble got to keep happening in my life? I remember walking through a nice residential area on a warm summer's night. You get that nice warm August night, and it's just getting dark and that warm breeze. And I'd walk down that street, and I'd see the nice homes, and I'd see the television on inside, and the families in there. And I'll tell you, I feel like crying. Why can't I just have a nice home and a family like other people? Why has all this trouble got to keep happening in my life time and time again? From as long as I can ever remember, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. Huh? If I'm at this bar, I say, guys, drink up, let's go over to that bar. If we're at this party, I say, guys, drink up, let's go over to the other party. If I'm married to you, I should be married to her. Never quite right. And I don't know about you guys, but I'll tell you, I get one of those double vodkas or whatever I'm doing that day, it's like this. Here, I don't know if you remember or not. I'll give you one more. Here. I did that one night. Two guys get up and left. You should see when I do that at detox or on the ceiling. I'll tell you something. I have a couple of those double vodkas and those sweaty hands would go away. That knot in my stomach was gone. The rage subsides. The loneliness vanishes. And I walk into that wedding like I own the joint. And I am moving and grooving. And I'm talking to the ladies, and I'm sitting with my buddies, and we're drinking and snorting and carrying on. And at that moment, everything in my life is absolutely perfect. And the world is a much better looking place. Same wedding, same people, same circumstances, but you put that vodka in me, and my perception of all that changes. And I get that immediate sense of ease and comfort. And that is why I drink whiskey, because I like the effects produced by it. But I'm alcoholic. Something happens to me that only happens to one out of every 10 people that drink it, called a phenomenon of craving. And I'd start drinking and I couldn't seem to stop. I'd end up drinking 60 ounces of vodka and I'd smash up my car. I'd go out after work for a few beers with my buddies. I'd end up going on a 5-day bender. I get fired from my job. I tell my wife I'm going out for a loaf of bread. I run into Peter. I come home 3 months later. My wife's leaving. I'm out there drinking, partying, carrying on. I don't want to stop. I got no money, so I'm stealing yours. And now I go to jail. And what everybody focused on in my life was the crashed cars, the broken marriages, lost jobs, going to jail. We looked at drinking. We never looked at alcoholism. And people told me from the time I was 18 years old, Butch, if you just quit drinking whiskey and sticking needles in your arms, you'd be okay. And there was times I wasn't drinking whiskey, and guess what? I wasn't okay. As a matter of fact, I'm crazier sober than I ever was when I drank. But all those well-meaning people could see, and they were well-meaning, was that when I drank, the trouble that followed. So naturally, they said, stop drinking. You'll be okay. But those well-meaning people didn't understand how I feel when I'm sober. How could they know? I didn't even know. I'd love to stand up here tonight and tell you, I woke up one morning, HFC Finance was dying to lend me money. Work was thinking of promoting me, and my wife was sending me flowers. And I thought, I think I'll join AA today. Huh? Every now and then I hear some moron from the front of one of these rooms say things like, if you're not here for the right reasons, you might as well drink. And every now and then I'd like to get that tire iron back out. Huh? The right reasons? Did you come to Alcoholics Anonymous for the right reasons? I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had nowhere else to go. One more time, my back was against the wall. My boss called me into work on a Tuesday. He said, Butch, you're a hard worker. I said, well, thank you. He said, but you're not here much. Picky. He said, you think you might have a problem with alcohol? I said, no, but I know what the problem is. He said, maybe you'd share that with me. I said, it's my health. He said, really? I said, yes. Now, granted, my poor health may have something to do with my drinking. I'm going to quit drinking. My health's going to get better. Everyone's going to be okay. He said, you think you might need some help quitting drinking? I said, no, I'm just going to quit. Got up and left his office. Was to find out later his wife had been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for many years. Can you imagine the chuckle he had as I left, huh? Oh, he's just going to quit. That was Tuesday. I woke up Thursday, another hotel room in another town, drunk. I didn't keep him waiting long. And for whatever the reason, this morning I woke up, I knew the jig was up. I had used all the lies. Huh? Alcoholics are liars. I don't know what that's about, but I will lie when the truth would serve me better. Pathological liar. I'm the type of alcoholic that goes out and plays golf all by himself and cheats on the scorecard. I do. That's not the best part. At the end, I look at the card and go, good game, Butch, good game. So I'd used all the lies. I know I'm in trouble. I got to come up with something good. I had a few tequilas. I turned my mind to it. I thought, I know what I'll tell them. I'm alcoholic and I'm going to go to AA. And that's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And for anybody here tonight who's new, we couldn't care less why you're here. We couldn't care less. We're just glad to see you. And maybe, just maybe by the grace of God, something someone will say, something you'll hear, something you'll read, and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous can happen in your life, and you can go on to live a happy and useful life like so many men and women here have been able to do. Just keep coming. And I've been a blessed man, as I said in the beginning, from the day I came here. Deep love for the old-timers. Deep, deep love. I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say you should never put people on pedestals. Well, you do what you need to do. But let me tell you something. I have some people in pedestals, some of them here this weekend. Giants in our programs. Giants. Huh? Never for a moment have I lost sight of their humanities. Do you want to know the greatest gift my sponsor, Bobby Dobson, ever gave me? It wasn't some brilliant thing he pulled out of the book. It wasn't some profound piece of wisdom he laid on me. The greatest gift my sponsor ever gave me was he allowed me to see his warts. He allowed me to see him get afraid. He allowed me to see him get angry. He allowed me to see him get selfish. He allowed me to see all of him. Because if he hadn't, and you don't continue to, I will never measure up. We are much more brothers and sisters in our defects than we are in our virtues, aren't we? And I had some wonderful people come into my life, none more than my own sponsor. I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say, if you like your sponsor, you have the wrong sponsor. I hear that and I know I'm listening to an idiot. Idiot. I didn't like my sponsor. I loved my sponsor, and I love my sponsor today. You see, you were the very first people who helped me understand what my problem was, because I don't know about you, but when I got here, I didn't have a clue. Not a clue. I'd been told what my problem was. A lot of people told me what my parents told me what my problem was. The police told me, the courts told me, the psychiatrist. I'd been told for years, just quit drinking. You were the first people that said, kid, drinking's not your problem. It's your solution. How you feel when you're sober is your problem. You are restless, irritable, and discontent, and you have to drink again. I don't have a choice whether I drink or not. That's what makes me alcoholic. I have lost the power and choice, and I have to drink again. Alcoholics of my type, not drinking and not treating alcoholism and sitting in AA meetings does not treat alcoholism. That is the great myth that kills many alcoholics. The meetings are where the solution is. The 12 steps treat alcoholism. So a guy like me not treating my alcoholism and not drinking, I get so restless, irritable, and discontent that eventually I have to do one of two things. I don't have a choice. I have to do one or the other. Either blow my brains out or drink again. Most of us drink again, but we all know someone who's paid the supreme sacrifice. Didn't have a clue what my problem was. Selfishness and self-centered, you told me, was the root of my troubles. I had no idea. I had no idea. Not a clue. If you'd have asked me the day I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, Butch, what kind of a guy are you? You know what I'd have said to you? I'm a good guy. I'm a swell man. And you could have hooked me up to a lie detector test and asked me that question, and that needle would not budge. Because I believed that. And let me tell you why I believed that. You see, I always judged myself by my intentions. You see, my intentions were always good. Unfortunately, the world judges us by our actions. And my actions and intentions never ever lined up. Selfishness and self-centeredness, the root of my trouble. And you told me that I had to be rid of this or it would kill me. And there seems of no way of getting rid of this without God's help. And you told me that was the purpose of our program, and that was the purpose of our steps. You told me that what we have here is a set of principles that are spiritual in their nature. And if I would start to practice them as a way of life, not talking about them and analyzing and discussing, but if I'd start to practice them as a way of life, would remove that obsession for me to drink whiskey and get a load of this, allow me to live happily and usefully whole. What an incredible promise. All I ever wanted, in all the mayhem that was going on in my life, in all the lives I ran through and over, in all of that stuff, all I ever wanted was to be okay. I just wanted to be okay. And you guys told me that you had a design for living here, that you had a practical program of action. And if I would start to take these steps and find a power greater than myself that would solve my problem, I could have all of that. Incredible, incredible deal. I thank God for the foundation that you gave me an Alcoholics Anonymous to this very day. I thank God that you taught me what it meant to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, to be a member of a home group, not just going around to meetings and sucking everything I can get out of that and moving on, but an active participating member in a home group where I could be involved and be a part of it. I thank God that you taught me to be an informed member of Alcoholics Anonymous so I could go to my business meetings and make informed decisions and not just raise my hand because you raised your hand. You gave me that foundation. You encouraged me to start to read and understand our traditions. Our traditions to me are as much a part of my life as the steps are. Those traditions are as much a deflation of ego in my life today as our steps have been. And you encourage me to start to learn and understand a little bit of our history. You encourage me to read AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, pass it on. You said if you're going to spend your life in Alcoholics Anonymous, would you not like to know where you came from? Would you not like to know what was done on our behalf so we could sit here in Marietta, Georgia and enjoy this weekend together? And you started to give me that basic foundation. And I'll be so ever grateful for it. And on that foundation, we've been able to start to build. You told me about that selfishness and self-centeredness. You told me that Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of action. It's about change. It's about doing things. And the changes start small and they start to grow. You taught me things like we want you to come to the meeting early, go to the washroom, get your coffee, sit down and be quiet. Maybe you don't want to listen to what's going on in that meeting, Butch, but maybe those gentlemen sitting there would like to. And for once in your life, why don't you think of somebody else other than yourself? Oh, it was true. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a sewer for a mouth. I didn't know any other way to talk. I'd been running those streets since I was a kid. And nobody embarrassed me in an AA meeting. Nobody humiliated or centered me out. But you took me aside after with love and kindness. And you said to me, kid, this isn't some juke joint bar you're sitting in now. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a classy organization, a ladies and gentlemen. And we don't use that filthy language in AA, Butch. Maybe it doesn't bother you, but maybe it bothers that gentleman sitting there. And for once in your life, why don't you think of someone else other than yourself? Oh, it was true. And the changes started small and they started to grow. And you started to take me through this process and take me through this inventory. I think one of the greatest disservices we do is give somebody a book and say, here, go do this. And we kill them. Because you see, I suffer from an illness where I cannot differentiate the truth from the false. I need somebody to take me through this process to help me see what I need to see. Because self cannot see self. I cannot do it. And I'm so grateful I didn't hear some of this quick-lip crap that I hear, oh, just don't drink and go to the meetings and you'll be all right. Huh? Isn't that a nice little out for me? So that I can, now that my life's better, I can sit at home on a Friday night and watch my flat screen TV. No, no. The people who came into my life said, kid, you have a lot more wrong with you than drinking. You come with us and we're going to show you what you got to do to get well. And I'd be so very, very grateful for those people that did that. Took me through that inventory. Helped me see. I didn't do an inventory and go, my, Butch, you haven't been a very nice boy. It was not news to me that I was a lying, cheat, and thief. I knew that. But I had no idea the depth of my selfishness and self-centered. I had no idea the depth of my ego and how it comes into my life without me ever even knowing or ever seeing it. I had no idea, and you took me through that and through the process and through the amends. And I'm not going to talk too long about that. We got some cake somebody said to eat. I don't eat much before talking, but I do pretty good after. But you took me through, and you took me through the amends. What an incredible freeing process. Incredible freeing process and forgiveness process that was. I don't know about you, but my entire life before coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and a long time after, every single person I've ever met, I've compared myself to. Every single person I'd ever met, I was either better than or less than. When I went to school from a kid, they had the kids in school who did good and belonged to all the clubs and all that. You know, the goofs. I hated those kids' guts. Huh? You want to know why? I didn't know it then. I know it today. I didn't feel as good as those kids. That was the truth. And then they had the kids behind the school were smoking and drinking and starting to cut up. And that's where I hung out because I felt sharper than most of those kids. Huh? But my entire life. Before and for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing I do when I meet you, I size myself up. And I'm always better than or less than, but never the same as. And through that amends process and through these other steps, you've allowed me to be just one amongst many. that I can look you in the eye and I don't have to be better than or less than, just the same as. Incredibly freeing process. And that forgiveness process that happened through that inventory and through those amends. Incredible thing. You know, I've listened to people debate in a meeting for 45 minutes whether they were recovered or recovering. Smoke starts coming out my ears, for God's sakes. Jesus. Our book's very clear on that. It's right there in the book. Huh? But I thank God what you showed me in the book where you told me that it's easy to let up in a spiritual program of action and to rest on our laurels. And if I do, I'm headed for trouble. Because I am not cured of alcoholism. Not cured. What I have is a daily reprieve that's contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And I want to share something with you. I want to share something with you that sometimes the longer I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, sometimes the longer I'm here, the harder it is for me to be truthful with you. Sometimes the longer I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, the harder it is for me to come to you and tell you I'm dying inside and I don't know what to do. Because I've been sober for a while and I'm an active member of AA and I want you to think I have it all together. Sometimes the longer I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, the easier it is for me to become critical and judgmental. I know you never do that here in Georgia. You don't have to worry, but I do. Look what they're doing over there. Look what's going on over there. Huh? Easy to let up in the spiritual program action and rest on our laurels, isn't it? I cannot stay spiritually fit today from what I did yesterday. I cannot stay spiritually fit because I used to be a GSR. I cannot stay spiritually fit because I used to go to the detox. I cannot stay spiritually fit today because I used to make coffee at my home group. I cannot stay spiritually fit today because I used to work with new people. I stay spiritually fit today by the actions that I take today. And it's very, very easy to start to drift. I can be running frantically around AA. There's a difference between action and activity, that's for sure. Huh? We have a thing at home. I'll share this with you. We have a lot of speaker meetings at home. And at home, I don't know if you do this here, but when you celebrate your birthday, your 1 year, your 5 year, your 10 year, you get to pick the speaker and the chairperson and the players in the meeting and that. That's what we do. I don't know if you do that. But anyway, we have a noon meeting every day at home. I don't get to that meeting much. My sponsor insisted I work. But anyway, that's there. And there was a fellow that came to me. I didn't know the guy too good. He was maybe in his mid-60s, and he got sober. He was going to have his one-year birthday. And he came to me and said, Butch, could you come and talk at my one-year birthday? And I said, I'd be honored to come do that. And I went to that noon meeting and stuff. And at that, they call the fellow up, and his sponsor gives him his coin and stuff like that. And they called this gentleman up, and sitting in the front row is his wife and his son and his daughter and his little grandson. And he came up to the front of the room, and his sponsor gave him his one-year coin, and the tears poured down his face as he tried his best to adequately thank that group in AA for all it had done for him. And you and I have watched that thousands of times, haven't we? Huh? And yet, many of those same people, after that, turn and walk away from AA. Why? Why is it that so many people come here and for the very first time in their life find a solution to their problem? Why is it that so many people come here and for the very first time in their life find some happiness and joy in their life, find a new way of living? Things are going good, and then so many of those same men and women turn and throw all that away and go back to that hell they came from. Why would we ever do that? I believe that we do that the minute I start to let up in the spiritual program of action. Does that mean if I start taking actions on Friday, I'm going to be drunk by Monday? I don't think so. But I'll tell you what happens. I so very slowly and so very subtly, alcoholism starts creeping back into my life. That selfishness and self-centered starts to creep back in so slowly, and I become the extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. Though I usually don't think so. And so I thank God that you kept me there. And you introduced me to a loving God. The great joy of this whole program. I believe that that's what our entire process and program is about, is to enable me to find that power and introduce me to a power that is personal and working in my life. If you'd have asked me when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, do you believe in God? I would have said, yes, I do. and I was never a disbeliever. But it meant to me about the same thing as the price of coffee beans in Brazil. Had no real meaning in my life, no real purpose in my life. Chuck Chamberlain often talked in that about that we have one problem, and only one problem. And from that one problem, it comes all other problems. And that problem is that conscious separation from God. And if you'd have asked me what God was, I would have said it's a guy way up there in the sky. Way up there. And he has long hair and a beard and a big stick. Charlton Heston. Huh? And if you were good, he watched over everything. If you're good, good things happen. If you're bad, bad things happen. Well, if God's way up there and I'm down here, have you ever heard more of a conscious separation in your whole life? You were the very first people that said to me that deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is that fundamental idea of God. And in the final analysis, it is only there that he may be found. Huh? And I have come by listening to your stories. That's where I come to start to know a God, by listening to you. And I continue to. And through the process of these steps, awoken my spirit enough to get me to start seeking. Till today, the great reality of my life is that my Creator has entered my heart and lives in a way that is indeed miraculous. It is the central point of my life, my relationship with God. And you told me how I could improve that. And that consciousness to me just means it comes something real to me. And it is through my experience that it becomes real. And once that happens in my life, I've tapped into some power, some real power that works in every area of my life. It says in our book that a much more important demonstrations of these principles must be practiced in our homes, occupations, and affairs. And I believe that it is in that relationship with God that allows me to then go out, and this truly becomes a design for living. AA isn't something I do on Mondays and Thursdays. AA is a way of life for me. If I'm not a better husband, if I'm not a better employer, employee, if I'm not a better friend, I'm not doing Alcoholics Anonymous. It may look like it, it may sound like it, but I don't believe it's AA. I don't believe what it was designed to do. And you've introduced me to that, and I'll be forever grateful. And the great paradox, Alcoholics Anonymous, you told me if I want to keep all this, I got to give it away. Huh? Nothing ensures us immunity from drinking like intensive work with other alcoholics. When all else fails, this works. The occasional good deed is not enough. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others. Unless I continue to enlarge and perfect my spiritual life through unselfish acts and helping others, I will surely drink when I hit those certain low spots. And if you're a new to Alcoholics Anonymous or sober a few years and everything's been going along well, buckle up. Buckle up. Because some low spots will come. They will come. Huh? Incredible gift. We've been blessed, haven't we? We have been blessed. If we ask the people here tonight, how's your life since coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, you know the answers you'd hear. You'll hear it all weekend long. And we can go anywhere in the world and ask that tonight, and that's what we're going to hear. We've been absolutely blessed. If that wasn't enough, if you and I haven't been given enough already, you and I are then given the ability to change people's lives. That's not an ego statement. That is a statement of gratitude and a statement of humility. You and I, when armed with facts about ourselves and have this solution, are able to make the difference in a few short hours when nobody else was able to. And until such an understanding can happen, not much good can come of it. Incredible gift we've been given. Huh? Incredible gift. It says in our book that alcoholics laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. You ever wonder what visitors think of us sometimes? Huh? You know, you're having one of those birthdays like I talked about. Some family members come. Maybe some people from work come. Never been to AA before. Don't know anything about AA. Some monkey like me gets up here and says things like, yes, I bought a brand new Cadillac. I picked it up at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning and totaled it at 10. Ha, ha, ha. We all laugh. Ha, ha. Told my wife I was going up for a loaf of bread. I ended up in Alaska. Come home 18 months later. Ha, ha. We all laugh. We got a buddy, huh, Sandy? He talks from California. He talks about spilling a bottle of whiskey in his bed and then sucking it out of the sheets. Ha, ha, ha. We all laugh. You ever wonder what those visitors might be thinking? It says we laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. You know what it says after that? Of course you do. You've read the book. It says, why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we? Because we've been given the power. We've recovered and been given the power to help others. Incredible gift. My life before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous had absolutely no meaning or no purpose whatsoever. None. I don't know what your life was like. It's none of my business, but mine had none. I was either drunk, planning on getting drunk, recovering from being drunk, in trouble, trying to get out of trouble, planning on more trouble. My life focused around drink. I worked all week so I could get drunk all weekend. I worked to get money to drink. I deal to do. That's what all the, and all the people in my life are the same. Alkies don't hang out with social drinkers. No meaning, no purpose. I go to a detox at home on Mondays to go in and share some stuff with the people, not because I'm some saint, because I'm some wonderful human being. It's the way I've been taught. I am the product of strong sponsorship, and I believe in strong sponsorship. And I am a guy that believes that without strong sponsorship, our chances of recovery are almost nil. Almost nil. Anyway, I go there, and I go there one day, and there's a guy in there, and I like to go Sundays because we have a big speaker meeting. This many people every Sunday, and I like to take new people to speaker meetings so they can listen. I happen to think it's good for new people to listen. I know it's not that fashionable today, but I happen to think it's good. Anyway, I go there one day, there's a guy in there in bad shape. Bad. I'm not talking hungover, detoxing. I'm talking physically bad. I thought, this guy might die. He might not make it. Well, I figured to myself, he could die at the meeting as easy as he can die there. I mean, dying's dying. You got to do it somewhere. So I took him. We took in a meeting. After the meeting, he and I spent a couple hours together talking about this design for living that we have, this practical program action. And I left him. I never saw him again. I'm sitting in a meeting one day. I see some guy coming across the room. I could see he's headed for me. Clean-cut looking guy, had a shirt, pair of slacks on. He came walking up. He said, Butch, you probably don't remember me. I said, I'm sorry, I can't say that I do, but I meet a lot of people. He says, my name's Ziggy. I went, holy smokes. That's not really what I said. That's what I'm saying here. He said, you remember me? I said, oh, I remember you. And it's the guy. And he's looking good. He said, Butch, I just wanted to come and thank you for taking me to that meeting that morning. He said, I haven't had a drink since that morning, and it's almost been a year. I said, congratulations. He said, I was wondering if I can ask a favor of you. I said, if I can do it, I will. He said, will you come and talk at my one-year AA birthday? I said, I'd be honored to do that, Ziggy. I went and talked at a meeting a little while ago, and I got up, big room full of people, and I got to the front, and I couldn't get going. I started to cry. I couldn't get going, Bev. And I'll tell you why. I looked out, and there sitting in a suit and tie, looking like $1 million, with his wife and all his children, was Ziggy. And he was celebrating his 20th birthday. Took him to his first meeting, talked at his 1 year, talked at his 5 year, talked at his 10 year, talked at his 15 year, talked at his 20 year. You think my life doesn't have meaning? You think my life doesn't have purpose? My life is so rich. My life is so full. I could stand up here for the next 2 hours. I'd be all alone, but I could do her. Yeah. Talking to you about things that have happened in my life since I came to this program and did the one thing that we only have to do one thing here, huh? One thing. That first step. That we admit to our innermost self. Our innermost self. Down here. I can go to any detox, any treatment center, anywhere in the world tonight and say to those guys and gals, you powerless over alcohol? Oh, yes, sir. Yes, I am. They all know it here. I need to know it here. I need to know in the depth of my soul that my life, then and now, depends on being with you and taking these actions. I'll tell you what I believe that's about. I believe that's about surrender. Surrender. I'm done. I'm finished. No more tough guy. No more big shot. No more Mr. Know-it-all. I'm done. I don't want to live this way anymore. I want to live the way you guys are living. Will you please help me? Will you please help me? And I become willing to do whatever it is you tell me I have to do. I don't need to like it. I don't need to agree with it. I don't need to think it's good for me. I just need to do it. And when I do that, I'm starting to walk in the sunshine. Do we got 2 minutes, Britt? I'm taking them anyway. I just want to share one or two quick things. Real quick, 2 minutes. On October 1st this year, our granddaughter was diagnosed with leukemia. She's 5 years old. And she was admitted into Children's Hospital in Toronto, and they told us that it was going to be a 5 months treatment of chemotherapy and stuff. And she was there, and after a couple months in, maybe even less, they thought that the cancer was gone, and it was good. And then a few weeks later, they did another test, and the cancer was back, and it was worse. And the plan was that we were going to do two more rounds of strong chemo and then a bone marrow transplant, and she would be in isolation for 2 to 3 months after that. So we were going to spend another 5 months in Children's Hospital. And at that time, she had a 30% chance of recovery. And I've got a lot of friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had a lot of friends praying for our granddaughter. Anyway, they did the two rounds of chemo. Just a few weeks ago, now they finished, and the cancer's gone. And our granddaughter came home a week and a half ago, cancer-free. But here's the deal. See, here's the deal. No matter what happened or happens from here, I know I'll be okay. See, I got you. I've got a God that you've introduced me to. You see, in those darkest times, we think our heart's going to break in too and we can't make it another day. That's when the men and women in your home group and a power that we've been introduced to will pick you up and carry you home every single time. Every single time. You see, my friends, Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon works in the good times and it works in the hard times. Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon work all the time in those darkest days. I want to thank you folks for the invitation and your patience in listening to me. You know, I don't know what's going to happen from here on in, and none of us know for sure, do we? You see, just because we get sober and become members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, life doesn't stop happening. People die. Relationships end. Businesses fail. People get sick. But I'll tell you something. Every single morning for many years now, including this morning, I say to my friend upstairs first thing in the morning, I say, if you see fit, I sure would appreciate it if you keep me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because my dear friends, there is no place in this whole world that I'd rather be than right here with you fine, fine people. Thank you and God bless you.